Hey, everybody, this is Mike with the Mountain Weekly News. Welcome back to episode number 32 of the Everything Snowboarding and More podcast. This week's podcast is being brought to you by Spark R&D. Spark R&D is the makers of the most reliable, durable splitboard bindings on the market. For more information, check out sparkrnd.com. This week's special guest is Nick Gilson. Nick Gilson is the founder of Gilson Snow, formerly known as Gilson Snowboards. Nick's got a really interesting take on the industry. Be sure to listen to that podcast. Basically, Nick and Gilson Snowboards was kind of laughed out of the trade show, and now they are doing really well. So be sure to listen to that. We're also going to look at where to find snow from the Christmas holiday on through our early New Year's. We're going to look at gear news, some resort news, and more. So thanks for tuning in. This is episode 32 of the Everything Snowboarding and More podcast. All right, well, if you're like me, you might be starving for powder this winter. Right now, there's a couple places in the United States that are absolutely going off, as well as Canada. It's an El Nino winter, and these places typically are not where you find snow during an El Nino winter. That's okay. The locals in these places are super stoked, as well as anybody making the drive or the flight up. First up is Whistler. Whistler has received 180 inches of snow this season. They've got an 89-inch base depth, and they've had about 62 inches of snow over the last 7 days. Holy heck. I believe Whistler's probably going to be pretty busy over that Christmas New Year's run, but I think right after New Year's, Whistler starts to slow down, is what the locals say. Mount Baker. Mount Baker in the Pacific Northwest is going off. They've received 14 inches in the last 24 hours, 88 inches in the past 7 days, and they've got a 121-inch base step up at Pan Dome. Oh my gosh. Do yourself a favor. If you haven't been to Mount Baker, this might be the year to go. It looks like storms are actually lining up for Baker. There's going to be some storms around Christmas, and then right after New Year's, it looks to be pretty good up there. In Colorado, Silverton Mountain. Silverton Mountain has a 60-inch mid-mountain base. They've gotten 25 inches in the last few days. And right now, up until December 27th, so you've got three or four more days here, they're doing $179 heli runs. So, and that's actually going to go after December 27th. Only $179 a run. That's a pretty good deal for going heli skiing. You no longer have to pay that, you know, $2,000 for the day and get skunked if it sucks. So if you've never been out to Silverton, be sure to check that out. This is the type of winter that they might get pounded on being down there in that southern part of Colorado. Speaking of Colorado, Vail Resorts season pass sales are ahead double digits this year compared to last year. Season pass sales are up 21%. Oh my goodness. This is just absolutely incredible. You know, some other data came out from the National Ski Areas Association, which actually said less people are skiing now. 60 million people plus were skiing in 2008 and 2011. Last year, the number of skier visits was 53.3 million. So that is down 11% as a whole. So Vail Resorts is putting more people out there. What's happening, though, is there's a balance between people that have season passes versus the people that are actually buying lift tickets. Which one is more important? To be determined. The average lift ticket right now in the United States is $122.30. So at that point, it is starting to become exclusionary where, gosh, you know, a century ago in the 1960s, lift tickets cost about $14. And when you look at inflation right now, ski tickets are not cheap, and they've been taking off relatively high compared to everything else. Here in Wyoming, we had our first avalanche fatality of the season. A 31-year-old snowmobiler died out in Horse Creek, just south of Jackson, Wyoming. Right now, we are dealing with a persistent weak slab, as well as the entire pretty much northwest Rocky Mountains. This is something that is not going away anytime soon. Basically, we have depth hoar down at the bottom of the snowpack, and then above that, where there's not depth hoar, there's just a couple faceted layers that are very reactionary. So keep that in mind. You know, with the snowmobile community, they're one of the people that we've been really trying to get the word out about avalanche education. ARI is doing a great job at teaching snowmobilers, and they're doing specific snowmobile avalanche courses. So if if you're a snowmobiler and you're listening to this and you've never taken an avalanche course, be sure to go out and take one. And I don't want to sound like a broken record with this stuff, but even if you've taken an avalanche course and you're a recreational skier or snowboarder, if it hasn't been within the last couple of years, take another one. Take a refresher. There's so much new technology. There's so many new pit tests that we can do. We're really looking at the human factor these days, decision making, terrain management, so much more than just looking for a beacon search. So be sure to get your avalanche education. And anybody in the snowmobile community or any of your friends that are snowmobilers, encourage them to do the same. Some interesting news in the ski and snowboard industry. Under Armour let a couple of their head ups go. Senior VP of marketing, as well as the global marketing director. These guys were let go over spending money at strip clubs and allowing their staff to expense money at strip clubs. What's interesting is this is pretty common practice in the ski and snowboard industry. That's just like taking people out. But obviously, with the Me Too movement and other things as of late, that didn't go over very well. So unfortunately, a couple guys at Under Armour, some head guys, got canned over that. Speaking of getting canned, Interbike is a trade show of around trade show that focuses on mountain bike and cycling as a whole. Interbike was held in Reno, Nevada, and is now canceled. It's not really surprising that it was canceled, and I think the reason that Interbike was canceled as a trade show is it's too specific. Mountain biking and cycling is a big niche, and there's some 60 million people in the United States to participate, but it is a very one-off show. That's why the Ski Industry of America, SIA, also probably ran into the same problem versus the outdoor retailer that covers so many different sports and so many different aspects to the different lifestyles, the winter market as well as the summer market. So Interbike is canceled. I have a feeling what you're going to see now in the future is outdoor retailers going to start covering bikes. And when that happens, this is going to be a gangbuster show. That'll be really cool to watch. In gear news, let's see, what did we talk about this week? This week on the website, I put together a list of my favorite snowboard jackets for the season. These also work for skiing, splitboarding, ski touring, all that good stuff. First up on the list was the Burton AK Gore-Tex Freebird jacket. What you're going to notice on this list is most of these jackets are all going to be using Gore-Tex. This one uses the C-Net stretch fabric. Oh my gosh, this has got a really free-flowing feel, lifetime warranty. It's a Burton. This thing's going to cost you $629, but it's definitely worth it. Be sure to check out this article on the website, or you know what you can do? You can just Google best snowboard jackets and we'll show up. North Face Purist jacket. Woo, this jacket is sick. If you're the kind of guy that's going on mountaineer missions, this is the jacket that you need. I actually gave the jacket the Editor's Choice Award at the Outdoor Retailer Winter Show. It's got a three-layer Gore-Tex material. This one's going to be a little bit more burly because they're not using that C-Net stretch fabric. This is the one that's going to be able to like really take rocks and trees and abrasions, no problem. $548. Black Diamond's up next with their Helio Alpine shell. This is going to be more of the shell for the guy that's going to be active running around in the wintertime. I actually have gone on runs in this jacket. Perfect for splitboarding. Really folds up really nice and tight. It's got that Gore-Tex C-Net fabric. This is the active version. Oh my gosh. You can use this shell year-round probably, or definitely three seasons. $399. Up next is the popular Patagonia Powder Bowl jacket. What can I say about this jacket? They're using 100% recycled Gore-Tex. How sick is that? Because of that, this becomes a two-layer jacket. So it's going to be a little bit better for somebody that's not in the super, super, super moist climate. You know, if you're riding around Mount Baker, this might get a little wetter than that traditional three-layer Gore-Tex. But the Powder Bowl jacket is absolutely sick this year. It's one of my favorite jackets of all time. Great jacket. Look for a full review of that to come. This one's only $399, so that's a hell of a deal, and it's Patagonia. Helly Hansen made the list with their Alpha 3.0 shell. This jacket's interesting. It's got a three-layer, but they're not using Gore-Tex. Helly Hansen uses their own, what is it called? Heli-Tech, I believe, is their membrane. And it's got a little bit of Primaloft inside the jacket, but you barely can tell. It feels like it's insulated, but it's really not. This is a really cool jacket. Helly Hansen, $475. You know what? These are the guys that have kept sailors dry for over 100 years. I think a little bit of snow is going to be no problem. Next on the list is a brand you've probably never heard of called Sherpa Gear. Well, maybe you had if you listened to our outdoor retailer best of your choice for last year. Sherpa Gear Lithang jacket. What I really love about this jacket, one of my favorite things, is it has these little Tibetan prayer flags on the zippers. It's a great company. Money is going back to Nepal when you support these guys. Only $299, and again, they're going to be using a three-layer material. This one's called Himmeltech, which is unique to Sherpa Gear. Mammut made the list. Wow, this is another burly jacket, the Mammut Aliver Armor Jacket, properly called the Armor Jacket. They wanted to use a new fabric, which is Mammut's Dry-Tech fabric. It was a change from the Gore-Tex C-Net that they'd used in the past when I'd reviewed this jacket or when one of our guys had. But this jacket's burly, just a really, really nice jacket. It's got the adjustable hood, pretty much everything, all the bells and whistles. I mean, it's a jacket, $590. This next jacket is pretty cool, Strafe Pyramid Jacket. I would say this is one of the best free ride jackets on the market. They've got a three layer material, Polartec Neo Shell. It's four-way stretch. Oh my goodness. When I say four-way, you could literally go to like yoga class in this thing and not miss a beat. $599, probably my favorite looking jacket of all the jackets I tested this year. Really, really nice, clean. Next up on the list, L.L. Bean. L.L. Bean made the Tech O2 3-liter storm jacket. This is another jacket that you basically can use for three seasons, four seasons. I've gone for runs in it. Tucks up really, really nice. Again, it's a 3-layer shell. Just pretty much do everything from keeping you dry in the rain to snowfall. $209. That's a hell of a deal for L.L. Bean. Okay, only a couple more jackets left on the list. Steo, the Steo Environ XT jacket. Steo's using this stuff called Duramex. It's a three-layer, 20,000 millimeter waterproof, 10,000 gram breathability. So that's not quite as good as Gore-Tex, but it's pretty darn close. What's interesting about this jacket, too, is it's got a really nice feel to it. Just traditional jacket, $409. Steo is a local Jackson, Wyoming company. Last but not least on the jacket list is the 686 Glacier Ether Thermoglaff jacket. How could I not have a 686 jacket on this list? This is the only jacket to feature full-on down, 600 power fill down. This is the jacket I wear against my body when I'm taking my dog for a walk. This is the jacket I wear at the resort when it's really, really cold. This is the jacket I wear around town, $300. Again, if you're interested in checking out more information on these jackets, mountainweekly.com/reviews/best-men's-snowboard-jackets, or just go to Google and type best men's snowboard jackets and we should show up there. Okay, well, next up is my interview with Nick Gilson. This is a great interview. Be sure to listen to what Nick has to say about how the snowboard industry as a whole treated him as he got into the industry and where he's at now. Hint, he is doing very well with himself and his company.
This week's guest is Nick Gilson from Gilson Snow. Nick, I'm going to let you kind of give us a little bit of your background. Tell us about Gilson Snow and how you kind of got involved in snow sports.
Yeah, great question. You know, I've been, first of all, Mike, thank you for having me on the show. I've been following you guys for a while now and am totally honored to be here chatting with you today. You know, rewinding back, geez, I guess about 5 years now, I was a middle school science teacher after I graduated from Johns Hopkins University. And in an effort to make our curriculum a little bit more engaging, we brought in these prototypes that I had built when I was 14 that were sort of the first exploration, at least in my part, into the world of fluid dynamics and snow. And so, you know, the concept's pretty simple. It's just, hey, look, you know, everything that is man-made and designed to move through a fluid, whether it's, you know, a car moving through air, you know, air is a fluid, a plane, a boat in water, a submarine, you name it, they're all curved in three dimensions to drive some sort of performance benefit. And, you know, Mother Nature gets it right, too. The dolphins, fish, birds, you name it, they're all curved in some form or fashion to drive some performance benefit. And we begged to ask the question, why then, if H2O solid is pretty similar to H2O liquid in physical properties, you know, why aren't we designing yet in three dimensions for snow? And so that's sort of what got it kicked off. It started as a class project, and as you might imagine, we got completely carried away, started really investigating this idea with our students. We were pursuing this idea, I say we, I mean the two science teachers. Well, our students were each pursuing their own year-long curiosity projects, and you know, at a certain point, we had developed these two prototypes. You know, we had drilled out the basement crawl space in the house I was renting in Nashville, started to build a rudimentary snowboard shop, and I think the line started to get blurred between becoming just a total passion for us and interest for us, and it really being in the name of education. But we kept marrying those two ideas and kept the students involved and took those first two prototypes out to Colorado, actually, and they just completely failed. Our first attempt was just awful. You know, I remember Austin describing it as like trying to ride a canoe down the mountain. So back to the drawing boards, you're going to toss in the towel, you know, and this kid Cassius raises his hand and says, oh, Mr. Gilson, if you can quit, we can quit. It's like, oh, man, no one will humble you faster than a fifth grader. And so we went back to the drawing boards, and you know, this is sort of from 50,000 feet, but by the end of that year, we landed on a concept that could accelerate 26% faster than the standard snowboard. And you know, it didn't take long for us to realize that nobody cared because you could already go uncomfortably fast on season boards. But at that stage, we knew that by adapting the geometry of snowboards and ultimately skis, we'd be able to drastically change the performance characteristics on the mountain. So that's sort of like the original history, you know, and then there's the part where we resolved to form a company, moved to the cabin in the woods with no running water or electricity, started hiking out each day and building our first shop and a donkey and horse stable, bought a 1976 Airstream trailer and a Ram truck with 212,000 miles on it, and hit the road with 30, you know, you could call them minimum viable products, but man, these things look like garbage. They're just white and black and delaming, and yeah, they were made in the donkey and horse stable. But 5 years ago, that's how we got our start. So we joke that we started the company more or less by accident with our students.
Wow, I love that story. And I mean, you know, I saw you guys. I think it's been 4 years now since you were displaying at SIA, and you guys, they kind of had you guys kind of tucked off into the corner, one of the new booths. And I remember walking by and just seeing the different materials and I think the different sidewalls you were using. I mean, something stood out. I was like, holy shit, like, look at these guys. Like, out of nowhere, you guys showed a great show and just had these really, you know, strong-looking boards. And then fast forward to a couple years later, and then we're not seeing you guys at the trade shows anymore. What was the reasoning for you guys to not participate with SIA or Outdoor Retailer on the actual trade show moving forward?
That's such an interesting question. And before I, you know, this is all sort of tied together, but I have to say, Mike, before I jump into it, we have such a soft spot in our hearts for you and for Mountain Weekly News, because you came up to that booth when we were, you know, such a young and infantile company, and you were so interested, so engaged, were completely receptive to something new and different and something that a lot of people at the time thought was just plain simply weird. And so, you know, that meant a lot to us. But at that time, man, in the first 18 months of the company's history, we got rejected by over 3,000 retailers. 3,000 retailers. And so, you know, at this stage, we're this brand new company. We're, you know, we don't really know what we're doing. We love designing and building boards. We think we're on to something. Snowboarders themselves on the mountain are talking about how much they love the technology, even though the boards don't look particularly good. So we knew that we at least had a place, but the industry itself was more or less completely rejecting us. And so, you know, SIA was costing us a fortune. And about 18 months into the company's history, we put out sort of the first company-wide memorandum, and we're a small team at this time, you know, maybe 8 people or something. And we said, from this point forward, not a single person has to spend a penny of company money or a second of their time pursuing a retail relationship, unless they reach out to us first. And at that moment in the company's trajectory, everything shifted. We had been, you know, we had 8 incredibly smart, talented people cold calling retailers, you know, joining them for runs on the mountain, and And we were just hearing awful stuff like, you know, you guys will be dead and gone by the time you're out of your daddy's workshop. But, you know, we remember all this stuff. It was a painful time for us. And so what ended up happening is that we decided that we needed to stop. And everyone in the company sort of looked at me and said, if we're not going to pursue this retail avenue, which is the historical norm for the industry, what on earth are we going to do? And it was like, well, I don't know. You know, it's clear that snowboarders are loving what we're doing. And it's clear that retailers and the industry itself really aren't. And that same year, Teton Gravity Research ran a piece on us. That was the first piece of press that we had ever gotten. And I remember thinking, like, man, you know, if we can just hang on, if we can just survive, get past these initial hurdles, you know, there really may be a much brighter future for us. And at this stage, we had no idea what we were going to do. But we decided that, look, if the industry was going to reject us, we'd have to somehow successfully connect with snowboarders themselves. And at this stage, I saw a line item come across in the news, and I was just sitting there reading this thing, and FedEx had just been awarded a $240 million loan to build a relatively small package and sort facility, you know, half an hour north of our facility. I was thinking, man, if this facility is $240 million, you know, they don't have some dude there with a tape measure measuring the dimensions of boxes. They probably have lasers that are taking cross-sectional measurements. And we figured that, you know, one of the biggest problems with shipping a snowboard direct to a rider is that it's really cost prohibitive. You know, the board costs $500 and the shipping's $200. You know, we'd be going out of business. And we just couldn't support that. And so we realized that the big reason for that was that you're shipping a lot of air. The board curves up in the nose and tail. And even though the board is incredibly thin the whole way, and by the way, much stronger than cardboard, the box that needs to fit in is, you know, 60 some odd inches long, 14 inches wide by 5 inches tall, and it's $200 to ship it really anywhere domestically. And at this stage, with this inside of this new FedEx facility, we realized that, well, what if we took a really thin piece of cardboard on the top of the snowboard and put a really thin piece of cardboard on the bottom and basically made it like a sliver or a sock? Then it would still curve up the, you know, 3 to 5 inches, but when it went through the laser scanners, no matter where you measured along the package, it was only a half an inch tall. And that dropped the direct-to-consumer shipping costs from, you know, $200 down to a cost that we could actually afford. And we said, hey, we're going to pay the shipping for everybody in the United States, and we're going to connect directly with snowboarders and skiers. We're going to build meaningful relationships with the people actually using our equipment instead of the retailers, you know, the wholesalers, retailers, and so on and so forth. And when we made that shift, we were able to start investing in incredibly high-quality raw materials, buying local, hiring local craftsmen in central Pennsylvania right next to our locally grown trees and a lot of our raw material sources. And at this stage, too, we were probably one of the lowest spenders at SIA, and we were probably spending $25,000 of money we didn't really have to be there to get no sales. And so at this stage, we said, okay, we're connecting directly with the people using our snowboards. Instead of spending $25,000 on SIA a year, why don't we pull that money from SIA and just throw a huge party? And so that was the original origin for the Summer Snow Day, which has now grown into this festival where we have, end of July, we have free beer for everyone through a bunch of beer partnerships, including Trogues and Dogfish. We have free Bullet bourbon for everyone through a partnership with Bullets. And we have live music. We built an Iron Mountain that we now cover with snow from all the local ice rinks. People travel from all over the country to be here. And there's, you know, 3,000+ people in the third year here enjoying partying with us, drinking beer all day, taking shop tours. There's 20 other companies here, tons of food trucks, free admission, free beer, free everything. And that's what we're doing with the money that we were originally spending on SIA to just get rejected.
I love that you're taking a different approach. And I also appreciate you mentioning when I first saw your board, because it, you know, the industry, we see a lot of people come in and they're very passionate, and then so many people are so, their egos, and, oh, that's not going to work, or this can't work, or, you know, that's, you have a lot of old grumpy people in the industry. And so the fact that you hung on, and to see where you're at now, I mean, what's next for Gilson Snow? I mean, you obviously, you guys have done really good with snowboarding. I keep seeing you guys on Google. I mean, the search traffic is up. I've yet to jump on one of your boards or skis, but that's definitely the next phase for myself. Tell us about, you know, the change to Gilson Snow and what that means for you guys moving forward.
Yeah, great question. You know, this was sort of happened organically. And first and foremost, as soon as we hop off this recording, let's get a board into production for you so you can test it out, get a proper review together and see what it's all about. But, you know, at a certain stage, God, it must have been when we were sort of really just starting to hit our stride as still a very young company. We started having a lot of friends that were both skiers and snowboarders in the industry and all around the country. And, all of our snowboarders were super stoked, and all of our skiers were saying, when are you going to make skis with the soft edge? And we were like, yeah, like, I don't know. You know, that sounds like a pretty tough thing for us to just pivot to. And so I guess actually 3 years before we even released them, we started just see if we could. We started building prototypes, testing them out, breaking skis, just basically taking our same approach of try something small, fail quickly, fail cheaply, and then get creative and figure it out. And so, you know, we built skis for 3 years without anybody knowing. And we're just taking them out to the mountain, testing them with our closest folks and closest people in the community that were on skis. And after about 3 years, we got to a place where the skiers were saying, hey, look, like, yeah, we've still got room to grow. We're going to keep refining this design. We're going to keep pushing this technology forward. But this is now at the point where we can't keep this to ourselves anymore. And so at that stage, we started to plan to actually release Gilson skis. And, you know, we never really intended to do this when we started out. It happened because of the awesome people in our community pushing us to try new things and be different in multiple ways. And now I'm incredibly happy to say that, you know, our ski business is small but growing incredibly quickly. And the wildest thing for me is, you know, just watching these skiers and certainly snowboarders too jump on this, you know, these designs that we've developed and then do things that are way beyond any of our wildest dreams. It's like the craziest thing certainly for me and certainly for our whole team to watch. I mean, it's been wild. You know, people are doing things on these skis and on these snowboards that we had never even dreamed of.
You've got this interesting, you know, teaching, you know, kind of scientific background meets, you know, snowboard engineer. You mentioned soft edges. For somebody that's never seen any of your skis or snowboards, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. People sometimes like call me a nerd in the industry or whatever, and that's fine. I'm okay with it. I like to nerd out about board design. I can own that. And, you know, I've found that there are tons of people out there who also want to nerd out about board design, and then there's tons of people out there who, like, don't really care about the science, but this is super buttery, and I'm having a blast. So, you know, I think it's okay. It's something we've grown into. But, you know, to talk specifically about the soft edge, it's interesting. The first prototypes that we built in 2013 that Austin described as like trying to ride a canoe down the mountain were just garbage. They had totally failed. And so it was an early lesson in this idea that, you know, all innovation, you know, I really think comes from only two places, either the lessons learned from repeated failure or from a total accident. And we've definitely had a few of both. But the soft edge was actually a response to that initial failure. It was a way to address all of the failure points of those early prototypes. And it worked, which is why we went on to even consider starting the company. But it's really simple. It's just, and it's funny because it was a reaction to a total failure. And it's now, when people talk about Gilson and the Gilson design, the soft edge is the first thing that they'll bring up. And, you know, you go back far enough, it was a complete and total reaction to a series of pretty heartbreaking failures. So it's interesting how things work when it comes to pushing design forward and innovating. But the soft edge is really simple. It's basically just a bend in the P-Tex up to your steel. So it creates this what we call a soft edge, just inside and under your steel edge. So that, and it's actually, it's rounded enough that you can float and drift and you won't ever catch on if there's no metal. It's just a bend in that base layer of P-Tex, and it allows you to essentially float across the snow, and it opens up this new type of motion. So, you know, a surfer or a wakeboarder can absolutely carve just like a snowboarder, but they can also also laterally drift. They can float. And they can drift to the side and feather their edge and then edge up into a proper carve whenever they want to. And so on snow, when you do that, it's this sort of grinding sound. And if you go the opposite way, it's an edge catch and a face plant. And so what the soft edge has allowed you to do, I mean, if you imagine in the trees or in the moguls, instead of like cut, cut, cut from edge to edge to edge, you can float and pump and drift off the moguls or between the trees. And then when you take it on to a groomed run, you can actually release steel to snow contact, which drops your coefficient of friction, point and shoot, take off, and control your direction with just your soft edge in a sort of a drifty, floaty turn, or you can edge up onto your steel and carve just like a regular snowboard. And then, you know, for the people in the park, and, you know, I've broken myself a few too many times. And, you know, I just turned 30, and it's taking me a little longer to heal these days. So I succumb to the peer pressure to send it in the park a little less, but, you know, certainly still do occasionally. But for all the folks in our community, they're just, like, absolutely ripping in the park. It's so cool to see. But the soft edge actually flies a 16th of an inch above the steel rail. And so you can keep an insanely sharp steel edge and still never worry about hanging up in the park. You can also board slide a fallen over tree in the woods without worrying about your edge hanging up on the bark. So, you know, there's been some things that we developed this for on purpose, and there's been some really cool things that have happened sort of just by putting this out in the community and seeing what people do with it. But, that's sort of the history and the philosophy behind the soft edge, which has become one of the most important design components of everything we do here at Gilson Snow.
I am 100% sold. I don't know if you know my background, but I grew up surfing, and so that's number one. And, like, the fact that you were talking about the curvature, you know, early on, and then just the way you described it, I mean, I tend to ride really light. You know, I like to surf and really float down the mountain, and you're right, you know, with surfing, you do get a little bit more of that lateral movement that sometimes you don't get when you're fully locked in. This is just perfect. I guess, Nick, a couple more things. Who's your target audience right now for, let's say, snowboarders? Are you selling a lot of, like, park boards, you know, the East Coast? Who do you see most of your boards going to right now?
You know, it's crazy because we've got this this online presence, and because our boards are different enough to turn heads and make people go, you know, what is that, and then share it with their friends. We've really seen this proliferate in ways we didn't really expect. So our top biggest markets, believe it or not, are California, Colorado, and Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania, because we're locals here and the state has totally embraced what we're up to. Colorado and California, obviously big populations of really avid skiers and snowboarders, but we're shipping boards, believe it or not, to Texas and Alabama, to Oklahoma, to England, to Norway, to Scotland. We're shipping them to France and Switzerland. We're shipping a ton of boards in the counter season. You know, during our summer down to New Zealand, Australia, we're just starting to get into Argentina, Chile, and Brazil, and we've just started to get some organic traction in Northeast Asia, of all places. So, you know, the whole thing has really started to spread, and realistically, you know, who is our target demographic? We don't really even have that big of a marketing team. You know, we're so focused on design and production and getting out there. You know, our marketing team is a group of awesome people who travel the country right now to hang out with snowboarders and skiers and drink beers and take some turns and let people test our equipment for free. It's, you know, our national tour. And so, you know, the target folks that are adopting Gilson and jumping into our community are really the people who are willing to try something completely new and different. They're willing to test something that they may not have ever even seen before. And then when they jump on this equipment, they have a blast. And they're the type of people who, you know, plain and simple, they just want to have more fun on the mountain. And, you know, Mike, coming back to what you were saying about surfing and wakeboarding and kiteboarding, the crazy thing is that whether you're an intermediate snowboarder, an advanced snowboarder, or a complete and total expert, it typically takes most people about 3 runs to adjust to the Gilson design. They'll say, the first one will go like, whoa, that's really weird and different. Second run, they're saying, okay, I'm kind of starting to feel it. My muscles are starting to adjust. And then by the third run, it completely clicks. And the crazy thing is that for surfers, wakeboarders, kiteboarders, even water skiers, anyone who's had that lateral motion before and knows what that feels like and their muscles are adjusted to it, I kid you not, it's like 20 feet and they're cheesing, be like, oh man, I've never felt like this on snow before. It's one of the coolest things to watch.
Wow, that's awesome. Okay, so you mentioned a demo tour, and I guess where can people order your boards and find out more information about everything that Gilson Snow is doing?
Yeah, great question. So we have a national tour that's cruising around the country right now. Our team is out in Colorado. Tanner, Josh, and Chrissy and Angelica are joining them soon. Angelica and Chrissy are both totally awesome. Chrissy is the most recent addition to our team. She was an intern with us last year, and just an amazing person. And one of the terms of coming on full time is that she demanded that she get to be on every single day of the national tour in 2019. So that was an easy thing for us to agree to. And Angelica is one of the Freeride World Women's Champs from Europe and just this totally awesome person. And she's coming over to the States to cruise around on our tour this winter. So she's flying over in early January. But check out the tour schedule. It's on gilsonsnow.com. That's GILSONSNOW.com. And then if you click on About and Winter Tour, there's a schedule there, a video, more information about the tour. On that website, we just finally got the bull by the horns on the website. We've been jerked around for 5 years now, and finally we were like, you know what, we're fed up. We're going to build this thing ourselves from scratch. And one of the founders of the company, Adam Vanderheiden, is actually the guy who wrote the algorithm for Discover. So anytime a Discover credit card is swiped, it runs his algorithm to determine whether or not to authorize or deauthorize the transaction. That bright dude. And so he's like, you know what, I'm so sick of working with these third parties. I'm so sick of not having control of our website. And so over the last 6 months, he just taught himself how to do it and built one from scratch. And we've partnered up with Lance Smith, who's an avid, you know, formerly avid snowboarder in our community who just rides Gilson, was tapping me on the shoulder saying, hey, you know, I want to do this web development with you guys. And like, oh, yeah, like, you know, what projects have you done before? And he, you know, sends me a link to one of his former projects at science.nasa.gov. I'm like, okay, dude, you're hired. So Lance and Adam built our latest website together. We just launched it about a month ago, and I think it's just awesome. For the first time in 5 years, I'm finally proud of our website. And so, yeah, I encourage people to jump on, check it out. Check out the Gilson design page. You can learn about the soft edge, the other design features. One of the things that we love about our job is that we get to work in a space that we absolutely love. And so our phone number's there, our email address is there. Reach out, call us, chat with us. Let's nerd out about board design. And let's get you on a demo, and then whenever you're ready, we'd love to build your new board or skis for you.
Perfect. Well, Nick, I wish you guys the best. It's been really fun to watch you grow, and I know that you're going to be one of those brands that's going to be here in the future. I mean, you obviously, just again, this scientific background and how it started with, you know, being a teacher and the kids, it's very organic, and we love stories like that, and obviously, the soft edge works, and I like that you kind of described that it might take a little while to get used to, and that's just like anything. But once people are willing to try something new, and there's so much hesitation. I mean, I finally just started using BOA boots. You know, I was like, oh, BOA sucks. Turns out BOA does not suck. But as the grumpy old
snowboarder, yeah, pretty convenient.
You know, pull my laces up, and so you have to let go a little bit. And I think that you guys are definitely onto something. Last but not least, for the people that are really into social media, how can they follow you guys that way?
Yeah, great question. So on Facebook, we're Gilson Snow, just like our website. Same with Instagram, Gilson Snow. And so we're very active on both pages. And you know, we don't hire a call center. We don't hire people to, you know, answer social media. When you call the company, it's me or one of the other owners that picks up the phone, because when something's going really well, we want to be the first to know about it because it stokes us up. And if something's not going right, then we want to be the first to know so we can fix it. So know that when you reach out on social media or when you pick up the phone to call us, you're going to be getting me, Austin, Andrew, Adam, you know, Chrissy, or one of the other people that are on the core team here making it happen. So Gilson Snow on Facebook, Instagram, and gilsonsnow.com is our website. And we're looking forward to chatting with the folks in your community, Mike.
Right on, Nick. Well, I look forward to going riding with you one of these days. And again, we'll be sure to follow along with everything Gilson Snow is doing in the future. Thanks again.
Thank you, Mike. Really enjoyed talking to you today. Looking forward to seeing you soon, and let's definitely take some turns together.
Perfect. All right. Have a great one. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, that was a great interview with Nick. I wish Nick Gilson and Gilson Snow the best of luck in the future. These guys are taking a huge market share of the industry. They're doing it their own way, and it's really cool to see. And I just love the feedback that Nick has for us, and the fact that he did remember the Mountain Weekly News. I mean, that's really, really cool. Well, that does it for this episode of the Mountain Weekly News, Everything Snowboarding and More podcast, episode number 32. We are just cranking away with these episodes. I want to wish everybody a happy holidays. Be safe out there. If you're going to drink, get a designated driver. Taxis are cheap. Lives are not, and all that good stuff. So have fun out there. Get some snow. It's definitely a weird winter so far. The places... we're going to get it. Hopefully we're due. Well, actually, we're not because it's been so good here lately. But it's going to come. Just be patient. And remember, there's more to life than skiing and snowboarding. All right. Peace. Thanks again. Episode number 32 of the Everything Snowboarding and More podcast.